Sorry.
Tomas, Tomas, we are back, my friend. I know you're making some noise for this man, Chris Vecchio. Here, let me explain. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you today?
Doing okay, too.
Let me explain.
Let me explain.
Let me explain. Joel Embiid's
floor
speed is so slow. Well, I was going to chide you guys for the Knicks doing so poorly. Action Brunson is back in action, Tom, after being chided for his poor first two games. But yes, I learned something about pistachios. Apparently, the pistachios that I'm eating are inferior, and that makes me a fool.
Don't you forget it.
I mean, I hate to start off the show like that today, but...
Don't want
to
start off negative, but we can only grow from here, Chris.
I suppose that's true.
Sorry.
Once you've had Costco pistachios, you can't go back.
Well, I guess I'm getting a membership just for that, Tom.
I don't know how they do it. Like, I mean, it's crazy. I know it's going to sound crazy, and I'm not just trying to distract him or
change. You don't even have a Costco position, full disclosure.
I do have a Costco
position. Do you? Oh, okay. Let me take a look at your Costco
position. Oh, he's talking his book, Tony. Oh, he's talking his book.
Yeah, he's just short premium. He has a strangle on in Costco, so not even a Delta long position. Okay, go. What were you going to say about Costco?
I'm just telling you, they're... that's just a little bond scalp. You might want to pay attention someday. Live and learn.
Is that all of them?
Yeah, just the bonds. I'm keeping,
beautiful.
Keep my notes, keep my positions.
Nobody can make 5 or 6 ticks like you, me lord.
It's 5 ticks the hard way.
That's right. You see what you have to do here, Chris?
If you want to become... This is what we have to do to keep the lights on here. Keep you guys here. I got to scalp 5 ticks in the bonds all day long.
See how it turned around to being your default? The reason why he had to do it?
Oh, that's why he's the jefe. And we're just the peons, Tony.
Understood.
All right, what do you got for today?
You know, I wanted to do another sentiment check because last week on Let Me Explain, we talked about how the shape of earnings season was particularly negative up until that point in time. And I think it's worth understanding how last week evolved, that the changes the nature of the market that we're currently in, even as we head into the teeth of the Amazon Apple earnings, the Fed meeting, the non-farm payrolls report. Now, going into last week, the first quarter earnings were really bad. For a historical counterpoint, or at least standard, so to speak, companies that were producing positive EPS surprises up until the start of last week were seeing an average gain of 0%. And those companies that were seeing an EPS surprise to the downside, a negative EPS surprise, as we'll call it, were seeing an average loss of about 6.1%, very big. Now, that's against the historical average, where companies that typically do well were rewarded with a 1% gain over the past 5 years, and those that did not do well, had negative EPS surprises, were punished to the tune of 2.3%. Okay, so we go into last week with this really bad environment where companies that are doing well are not being rewarded and companies that are doing poorly are being punished by more than usual. Last week was such a change in sentiment. Now, coming into this week, the aggregate first quarter earnings results for positive or negative EPS surprises have more or less returned to their historical norms. Now, for the first quarter, companies with positive EPS surprises in the 2 days before, 2 days after, are seeing a 1% gain on average in their share price, just like over the past 5 years. And companies that are missing those negative EPS surprises, they're only losing 2.5%, no longer losing 6.1%. And so last week, to shift the entire aggregate of the reactions, not just for a single week of earnings, but for the entirety of the quarter, from the skewed, very bad, nothing's good, everything is very bad, to, okay, good is being rewarded, bad is being, you know, bopped on the head, but not in a significant manner, it meant that last week had been a good news is great news kind of world. And that shows that the market is taking things in stride right now. This correction that we just saw, it's difficult to say that this may be more than just that, the little bit of a correction. Sentiment around earnings is picking back up. That's a very important sign. It's different than what we saw during the decline in the first 2 or 3 weeks of April. Obviously, getting through Amazon and Apple, key to that, those being part of the Mag 7. And so at this point in time, I don't think bears really have their full story together. And if we see 5170 on the S&P by the end of this week, if we can survive these earnings and non-farm payrolls and the Fed meeting, unfortunately, I feel like the bears then drop the ball here and you now have earnings to refocus on, which are getting better and the market's responding more positively. You can't rule out the fact that the path of least resistance in these markets is probably back to the yearly highs and in quick order.
So you're just trying to talk yourself into a very bullish position.
You're trying to talk yourself into a tizzy.
Is that what you're doing? I'm not sure that, like, you're giving me a market commentary, but I'm not sure what the, you know, I'm not going to argue.
I actually find the markets, if you told me, you know, gun to my head, place a trade today, I don't know how you can be directional in the S&P or the NASDAQ right now. I'm looking for technical factor. I want to see 5170 in the S&P because I want to see us get through that area where the market was finding support at the end of March, beginning of April. Same thing in the NASDAQ. I want to see us above 18K, where we basically found support from the end of February through the middle of April. Because if we can do so on a technical basis, the fundamental winds have shifted that substantiate, okay, I have some things going for me right now in the near term. This isn't just a overexhausted bounce like what you had a week and a half ago. You know, a week and a half ago going into that Friday, fewer than 8% of stocks in the S&P 500 were trading above their one-month moving average. The last time we were at that low was the last week of October last year. I mean, that was a low in the market. The time before that, you have to go to March of 2023. The time before that, October 2022. So you had reached a natural exhaustion point. And the question we're working through right now is this a low or is this the low? And that's important for directional traders to discern, because do you want to get long in what's been the end of the bounce, or is this really just halfway back to the yearly highs and then we have a little bit more ahead of us? The return profile for the month of May, after a streak where you have 5 months green and 1 month red, where April breaks that chain of green months, is actually not that bad. April has been a disappointment, of course, from seasonal standards, from historical standpoint. But May, June, July, past 10, 20, 50 years have all had positive skews, positive returns for the S&P 500. So right now, if you're looking at this market, if you can survive this week, that was the game plan last week. And let me explain, let's survive this next 8 to 10 day window. Then we're probably on better footing and we're surviving it. We're rallying still. And so I don't think bulls have really anything to be too concerned about. We're at 2% away from the all time highs. Let's have a reality check here. This is not that desperate of a situation yet.
So I don't, I'm not going
to, it's hard to disagree. We went down
I'm not gonna,
percentage points. We've come back half of that so far. And now here we sit with really...
I'm not gonna argue about like whatever you think versus what I think or whatever, like that kind of thing. Like, I mean, with respect to the market, because it's just, it's a crapshoot. You know, nobody knows.
50-50.
You know,
of course.
Yeah, you don't know, I don't know. So let's tackle something different. You know, like as a topic. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to debate the market at this point. You know, I feel like we've gone back up and we've had a really nice rally. And given the fact that
volatility's on its lows, 15.
Yeah, I don't think there's that much. I don't like the pot odds to the upside. In spite of everything you said, I don't like the pot odds.
Why can't we slosh around for a little while?
I don't think there's that much upside. I think there's a lot more. I think the risk is really still to the downside. I think we're going to track the bonds, and meaning that every time there's an up move, it's going to be met with selling. But until that happens, who knows? And you know, and I don't think that's worth the chatter. I think
but even so then, right? You know, if you think you're going to chop around, you don't need to go to the S&P or the NASDAQ right now. The Russell still has a fairly high implied volatility environment compared to the other indexes. And like the S&P and the NASDAQ, it's effectively sitting in the middle of the range for the yearly high, the yearly low. So if you're looking to take any sort of trade here in the short term, I don't think placing directional bets around the crapshoot that is these earnings releases. I mean, last week Tesla had ugly earnings, and yet the stock rallied because of some promise about what's going to happen in the future. And then Meta actually had pretty good earnings, but they were a little bit more cautious about the future. And so their stock was punished. If Amazon doesn't announce a dividend today, what's going to happen to the share price? Because that's now become the new standard among big tech names, apparently, this earnings quarter. You have to announce a dividend to have your share price perform well. Google did that. We saw Meta do that a while back, right? So what if Amazon has really good earnings? So it's a total crapshoot out of the market response. I would rather just put on a Condor here in something like the Russell. Place it a little, the strikes wider than the yearly high, yearly low. Forget about the Fed. Forget about rates. Forget about all the noise this week. There's still a little bit of vol there. Take it while you can get it.
Okay. Like I said, I'm not necessarily going to argue that because, you know, again, I like the pot odds to the downside, but who cares? And I'm playing Amazon to the downside because I just think that there's way too much bullishness. I can't find a single person that's, you know, but I'm mixed on earnings today. I'm playing AMD a little bit to the upside. I'm playing Amazon to the downside. I'm playing Starbucks to the upside, you know, so.
He's not going to argue anything with you, but if these bonds continue to trade under 114, he is going to be mad at you.
No, I'm not going to be mad. If the bonds continue to trade under 114, I think they're going to give it up.
The market's going to give it up or the bonds are going to give it up?
The market. I have a 130 bid in there right now. I want to buy some. So I actually want to be filled at 130.
I mean, I get buying the dip, but absolutely from just my vantage point, you got to sell rallies and bonds still. We've seen this mechanical adjustment all year long where when the front month contract for the SR3, which when you think about ZN or ZB, obviously the correlation there is not going to be perfect because when you're thinking about the SR3 contract, it's overnight borrowing. And so things that are closer to the front end of the curve, like T-bills have a near perfect correlation with the SR3 contract. Twos are very, very close, right? I'm just explaining for the viewer, right? But when you got to ZN or ZB, the correlations with the SR3 contract are going to fall apart because they're not used for overnight collateral.
I actually like the ZNs here. I like buying, if you watch the way they're trading, mm-hmm. you want to use mm-hmm. this. Watch the way the 10-year notes trading, like it's there's definitely like somebody sitting on it. You know, it keeps it's heavy, but the other side to it is every time there's an uptick, it goes up way faster than it goes down. Like right now, it's got that like, you know,
you like got a seller in there. You're looking to try to take seller out so they can normalize.
Every time they bounce up, there's some seller comes in and starts stomping on them. But then as soon as that seller's gone, they just go right back up. Mm. It's usually. You know, when you can absorb all this selling, I really like them. So I just bought some bonds. I just bought some more notes. And I think that's a better trade than the stock market. But we'll see. I could be wrong. I'm just scalping them. So, all right. What else is on your plate here, Chris? What do you think?
You know, I keep looking at what's going on in metals. There's these changes in margins overseas as well. Shanghai Metals Exchange went through a margin change overnight, and you're seeing a lot of downside pressure in gold and silver.
Yeah.
I think if you look at the, you know, I know you think, I think you said this one on Sunday night, I was listening to First Call. I was making something in my kitchen. But you were talking about how you think the trade's dead now because of these margin shifts. They're squeezing out the speculators. Yeah. Technically speaking, longer term, the charts still look good. We're losing a little bit of support right now in the near term. I have a little bit of a long silver position back on, so I'm obviously not thrilled with today's price action. But technically speaking, they may still be constructive longer term. This just could be the opportunity where, because of this mechanical adjustment on the exchanges, there's a little bit of a flush in the short term. But to echo one of Ilya's points, something that's been going on that's really worth mentioning is that there's a huge uptick in Chinese gold buying, not just from the central bank, from Chinese retail as well. Chinese Shanghai gold volumes have surged in recent weeks. That's part of the reason why these margin requirements were changed. And you're seeing this big accumulation of Chinese buying of copper, of nickel, of iron ore, of oil again. They're starting to stockpile commodities. And there was that little nefarious part of my brain that said, what if they're trying to do something to skirt US sanctions down the line? They see what's happened with Russia and their assets. And so getting ready for a provocation of Taiwan, they're trying to hoard all these things, knowing that they're going to be cut out of the Western financial system once and for all. I think actually a more benign, reasonable explanation is that they're getting ready to devalue the yuan. It's some of the chatter that's been crossing a lot of macro strategists' desks recently that a Chinese yuan devaluation could be on the table. Because if you think that your currency is going to be worth 10 or 20% less overnight, then everything you're going to import is going to be worth 10 or 20% more. So you might as well get a lot of it on hand before the storm hits. It's worth pointing out in August 2015, when I was on my honeymoon on a train from Naples to Rome, they decided to devalue the yuan. And so when I got off that train, the dollar was 5 cents.
Still, it was off.
We got on the train. It was 116. When we got off the train, it was 121. And I blinked. I'm like, oh, that doesn't make sense. How could it be 5 cents more expensive here in Naples? And so I looked at my phone. I see yuan devaluation. But a yuan devaluation did what for stocks?
She stayed. It had a. She stayed with you as opposed to getting off the train right there and saying,
of course, this is Tom, we were going abroad. Do you think that I was long euros or short euros going abroad where my spending currency wasn't the US dollar? So I already had euros in my pocket for the entire trip before we left.
That's not what I mean. I don't think that
what I mean. Oh, well, because we took a nice bullet train for one of the legs of our trip.
No, sorry, because you're quoting Chinese currency prices on your honeymoon.
What do you think paid for the honeymoon? Yeah. So, but the point is, what happened during that week of the yuan devaluation? You see that you have an initial leg of weakness on day one, but that weakness kicks in for a few days in equity markets. It took several months for U.S. stocks to regain their levels prior to the Chinese yuan devaluation. So
I don't remember.
August 2015. I would just point out that there's something a little odd going on right now in the gold market and the commodities markets, and it's worth paying attention to. And if we do hear some news, I know everyone's focused on the yen right now, but that's part of the reason why China may be forced to devalue the yuan. They're losing competitive advantage to the yen, which is sitting at its lowest level since 1990. The BOJ Ministry of Finance tried to intervene yesterday. And what did they get out of it? Nothing. We're back down to basically last week's close. This is a risk people should be aware of. And if it comes down the pipeline, it's not something you fade immediately because it tends to have staying power. It has had staying power for a few days. And once you get through the first week, if vol is elevated, then you could start to look to fade the move if history is any sort of roadmap.
I'll tell you right now, if there's something that if you've never traded a currency before and you want to take your first shot, I love selling puts in the yen. There's not much money to make. Just say that. It's not like
there's not many upticks.
I was looking at that yesterday. You would think of that, and I was looking at it yesterday, and like you're laying out what one or laying out five to get one
in the yen.
Even selling
go to June.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
Yeah, it's crap because they almost like have a floor in there, but the yen's trading for 64, and if you go down to 62, you collect 200 ticks. So that's what is that? That's
June
20 times. It's $250, right?
That corresponds. If you do the math, it corresponds with roughly speaking 160.40 in the spot market, which is the 1990 high. And so the way the options market's priced right now, you're not getting rewarded for selling puts on the other side of that because the options market's saying there's no way the BOJ or Ministry of Finance let the 1990 level break in the yen. They're, of course, they're going to defend it. Why wouldn't they? So you're not really being
63 puts are like the equivalent of a little over $500 each, right? Isn't that what four?
Yeah, 20 ticks is 600 is $250.
That's what I said. 20 ticks, $250.
I'm reiterating it.
Right?
Yep.
Right. So the 16 deltas are the 63s. That's they're trading for, well, the market's 420. They don't even, you know what's amazing? More calls trade than puts. But maybe I'm not even looking at the front month, but I'm looking at the June options because it's 38 days. And
it's $550 approximately.
Well, today the yen's down 650 and yesterday it was up 600. So it's crazy. 2 day, I'm putting an offer in
for puts
to sell puts.
Bullish trade.
Yeah. I won't get filled. They got to come, they got to reach.
I know.
But, all right, so I like the yen. What else we got?
You hit currency vol. Currency vol is back. I think that currency gets ignored a lot because it's been through so many years of low volatility. You think about the 2010s, currency vol was dead.
Isn't the yen 11% in the back month pretty good?
It is pretty good. And I just point to the IVRs, right? Because currency vol, raw currency vol typically is
in the 90s.
And same thing for the Australian dollar. It's up in the 80s. It's not just the yen. It's across the board. You're seeing 40s, 50s. And in many cases, currency vol is higher. And because of how the contracts are structured, it's actually a really good way to dip your toes into the futures options market. The markets are liquid, particularly in the US hours. After hours, they're not so great. When you look at a
trade, they're not really 24/5 markets.
They're not.
Yeah, but I agree with you on the Aussie dollar. I sold a strangle in there yesterday. It's like watching paint dry, but I agree with you.
That's fine because they add diversity. Because one of the important things that you can do for your trading portfolio, particularly when you're going into event risk like this, is to add in uncorrelated trades, diversification. So if things go sideways, well, at least something is left out. That's why I actually just got filled. I see it literally a few minutes ago on a natural gas put spread here because I want something on this week that's not really going to be affected by the Fed. I don't know the last time natural gas cared about being impacted by the Federal Reserve. So
natural gas,
why not?
Had a really nice rally, but it's had a super nice rally. I'm long Delta in there, but short strangles with long Delta. It's weird. All right, what else you got, Tony?
That's it, my friend. You want to take a quick 90-second break? Good job out of you, Chris. We'll come back. We got a market measure next. Even the S&P's hanging out down 12. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
I really haven't done anything.
No.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.